This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to 3 ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it, and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I am feeling run down. I have seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit, and supports better sleep quality and recovery, in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein.
Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined for a second time by Art Berlanga, head coach of Forge Christian High School, football that is, and former head coach Gonzales High School, former assistant coach Hollister High School, moved back to Colorado to take over this program, and we're bringing him back on the pod to see what we've learned.
That's right.
So let's go, coach. How did you end up in Colorado? People who have not listened, they can go back and listen to the original pod. We're not going to rehash the whole career, but let's go from Gonzales to Hollister to Colorado.
Gonzales, pandemic, didn't work out. Visions, alignment, time to move on to the next place. Moved on to Hollister. I was there for 2 years as an assistant coach. Had a great time there. Learned a lot. Worked out, ended up being one of the younger guys on staff, which was a lot of wisdom, a lot of experience ahead of me. And I was just the dumbest guy in the room, which I really enjoyed, and just learned a lot of growth, a lot of learning. And then after those 2 years, coach, I had this desire and passion again to get back in wear the head coaching cap again. And I was looking, and there wasn't many opportunities in our local area in Monterey County, right? And I was like, okay, all my intentions was to go back to Hollister for a third year. And they had some things planned for me as well, where they had me work with Coach Thatcher as core defensive coordinator. So that was going to be the thing that we're going to work on together going into this season. But I got a phone call from a real good friend of mine, former college teammate of mine, who's the head coach at Colorado State University Pueblo here in Colorado, which is about 2 hours east of me where I'm currently at right now. And he recommended me for this new job at this new high school called Forge Christian High School. So the lead pastor who ended up buying this church, sorry, coach. And so this pastor bought the school and started all over again, renamed it, rebranded it. And he was looking for a head coach for the football program. And my buddy who played for this pastor, he was a basketball coach, believe it or not. He was an assistant basketball coach, played for him in high school, grew up with his sons and my buddy are the same age, and they grew up together. So they knew each other very well. So he called my buddy Phil up and said, "Hey, Phil, I'm looking for a new head football coach. I want to make sure it's somebody that can really build a thing from the ground up and do it the right way and do it the way we want to do it. I have one guy for you," is what he said to him. And he gave him my number. The pastor calls me up. We negotiate for about 6 to 8 weeks or so. We take a trip out. My wife and I enjoyed it. My wife loved it. And when she gave me the okay, I said, okay, and we're coming. So here we are.
All right. Let's dig into this. We've got a couple of things, and I'm going to go all over the place. We're not going to follow the script. You said I was the dumbest guy in the room for 2 years.
Yes.
Now, why that resonates with me is when we coach youth, and one of your classes you can talk about is how you're training seniors for life, right? And the cliches are, right, if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong room, right? You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, right? All of these cliches that we want to embrace in life, you actually got a chance to live it. Can you articulate some of the wisdom you picked up? You use that word, which I think is important, and how you would have never been exposed to that had you continued to run your own program, and why surrounding yourself with people that have done it and putting your ego to the side is so generative as both a coach, but as a teacher, as an adult, as we try to navigate the world.
Right. You hear many coaches talk about how they remain open-minded, want to be teachable, be coachable themselves, always learning. Well, I was in a position to where that was my exact scenario. And I don't know how many head coaches, I'm sure there was plenty of them, but how many head coaches go from being a head coach, running their own program, being successful running their program, doing it their way as far as within the coaching staff and finding out a culture and just implementing that culture. And here I am adopting and learning a whole different culture, right? And I tell you what, those coaches meetings, I really found myself taking a lot of notes. And the thing too, coach, when I first got there, I did not want to be that guy to walk into a room of experienced and knowledgeable coaches and all of those guys were former head coaches themselves. I think we had 7 total on staff who were all former head coaches. So here I come along, and I'm the young guy in the room, right? The last thing I wanted to do was like, hey, I think we should be doing this. I think we should do that. I was like, nope, that's not going to be me. If I'm asked a question, if I'm asked for my suggestion, my input, then I'll give it. But I'm not gonna come out firing at the hip. I did not want to do that. I just want to really humble myself and practice the art of humility. And that's what I did, man. I kept my mouth shut and was spoken to. And then when I was asked, I would give my input. But just the coaches, watching film session with Coach Thatcher, Coach Smith, Coach Cameron, and the guys on the Hollister coaching staff. And I just really learned a lot, man. And also another thing, I went from a 35, a 34 man roster on a varsity level to a roster of 65 kids. So doubled in size. And then I learned a great deal as far as how do you manage all those personalities? How do you manage all that talent and skill set and then use it to make sure we perform to the best of our ability? And then putting kids in the right positions to be successful, to help the team be successful, right? So there was a lot of things going on, coach, from practice script. I kid you not, my first practice, we get to practice, I have 7 scripts, man. 7 scripts. Because all these coaches had certain periods that they had to run and coach and lead. They had it was organized. It was scripted out in great detail what plays are going to run, what front they want to see it against, and vice versa, and what scout card needed to be shown during that play and what have you. And so I just have all these papers in my hand, and it was time to go, man. I had to learn fast, too. I was just thrown in the fire a little bit, and I just did the best I could I did the best I could to be a great follower. And that's what, that was my goal.
Yeah. I love that perspective. And I think you're in a situation there where your approach was to just be quiet and listen. And I'm sure you did this at times because I think it's such a valuable tool when you are the new guy. I talked to our new faculty at times when Bo came over here. I said, hey, look, you got 2 years to raise your hand and say, hey, I'm the new guy. Can you please explain to me why we're doing this? Right. Yeah. So that you get clarity, number one, but also if there is an opinion that you have that maybe goes counter, you can get an understanding of why they choose to approach things the way that they do. And right. So those of you listening, I think that's the other approach to add is like, hey, listen, learn, soak it all up, answer when asked to, but also ask for clarity, because if you're confused, guess what? So are the athletes. And right. So ultimately, how do you lead from that standpoint while you are following? Let me ask this as a follow-up. What are things when you left Gonzalez and you had that thing rolling and you had a certain way of doing things, you went to Hollister, now you slid back over to the head coach's chair. What have you added from Hollister? What did you continue from Gonzalez to create your new culture in this school where they're rebranding everything?
Absolutely. We do a lot of things similar to the time I had at Gonzalez, just because that's just who I am. And the thing I did take from Hollister that was instrumental in my growth and my development too, was the practice scripts. It really was, man. So now I'm at the point where I was at Gonzalez. I had things scripted. Like say, for example, we had an inside run period. I knew exactly what I wanted to run during that time, but I didn't have every single play typed out or written out. Right. I didn't have exactly the front that I wanted to see it against. I knew the front we're going to see, but I didn't give us the hard rep, right? Where, okay, what if they do this? I'm not going to chase ghosts, but I am going to put us in positions to where, okay, well, now we got to figure out how we're going to execute this play versus this front or versus this blitz, or if they do this or they do that, right? But one thing I definitely took from Hollister, man, that I implemented to this very day and every single week was scripting sevens period in great detail, anywhere from 12 to 15 plays, because we only have a 10 to 15 minute period at the very most. So how many plays can we rep out in 10 to 15 minutes, depending on the day? And then I will rep out inside a run in great detail. I knew exactly what was, and then certain days has certain emphasis, right? So a Monday will be, okay, we're only going to focus on zone, inside zone. That's all we're going to run is inside zone out of all the multiple formations that we run out of. And then Tuesday, we're going to run all power on counter. So every single day had a very intentional focus and emphasis when it came to the running game and the passing game. So I took that from my time at Hollister, which I did not do before.
Let me ask this follow-up as well. Since you're mentioning primarily run-type approaches, and I don't remember what you did when you were at Gonzalez, but how much have you evolved in your approach to philosophy on this journey? Meaning maybe you were a spread guy to Hollister's more of a run team to like, what did you end up landing? And we all come in with this idea where it's, this is what I do. But then you get to Forge Christian, it's, ah, I don't have those dudes. So like, how have you evolved in that sense?
So it was funny because my time at Gonzalez to Hollister was actually almost identical system, believe it or not. Multiple set offense, 20 personnel, two backs, no tight ends, 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, 11 personnel. And it was very similar. They ran outside zone. We didn't run outside zone, but we taught outside zone. We ran power, we ran counter tray, and we ran the quick game, three-step game, right? Your hitches, your quick outs, your fade ball, or what have you. And it was very identical, to be quite honest with you, Coach. And it just made me learn a little bit more and take a step back as far as, okay, what's going to be more efficient running this type of system? And what worked at Gonzalez necessarily didn't have, I would say it would work at Hollister because, like you said, the personnel was a big difference between personnel, right? We did a lot more window dressing at Gonzalez just because we didn't have the dudes to match up against certain teams we played against, right? We just had to out-coach them, out-use angles instead of just strength and technique. And yeah, that could get you very far, but we didn't have those type of dudes, right? So we had to improvise quite a bit and just figure out who we are. And then now currently at my current school, I'm doing a little both, because we're still the smaller team. We're still the smallest team in our league. And even in Roman, I think we have 250 students in our school. It's co-ed. And the next biggest school after us is 200 students more. So we're by far the smallest school in our league. And yet we finished fourth in league this year. We finished 4-5 overall. We only play 9 games for whatever reason at the level we're at. But it's personnel, man. You have to understand your personnel. That's the thing. And then not only the personnel coach, I had a coaching staff from out of state. The first time we met as a staff in person was the first day of practice in the summer, June 12th, a Monday. I had a graduation on a Friday at Hollister, hopped in my car that day, took me 2.5 days to get to Colorado. We started practice that morning at 7 a.m. And that was the first time I saw my coaching staff in person. We had meetings on Zoom, but you know how it is, man. It ain't the same, man. It ain't the same when you're in the same room in person. So we had to figure out how to coach together along the way as well. So it was a great, it was such an experience I've never had before that it was very challenging, but at the same time, I really grew a lot and I learned a lot.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue into what I asked you the last time, which is what did you realize right away that you needed to figure out? And you've been a head coach, you've been around masters, right, at Hollister and seven different people that have been head coaches. You've been prepared and now you're here. And like you said, you didn't even meet your team until you got there. So give me the list. These are the things that, as well prepared as I was, nothing could have prepared me for this.
I had to make a quarterback change halfway through the season. That's one. The parents weren't too patient with me at this process, right? More so the dads and the moms. And that's one thing I also had that was something new to me as well, coach, is that back in our area, man, especially with the public school system, there's the parents are just so happy that their kids are doing something productive, that they're out of trouble, that they're not involved in the gang's influence, right? And the reality of that within our communities. And a lot of fathers were working a lot, right? They're not available to attend practices or the games because they're blue collar communities, right? They work their tails off, right? And they can't always be there for their child as they would like to. But this is different. This is a private school with some parents are very successful. Some parents are also, their students are on scholarships, right? I have some players that have to work during the year too, on the weekends, right? So I got both extremes, right? I got the parents who are well off. I got the parents who still work very hard to get where they're at or have what they have. So that was an adjustment as well. There's the level of fathers who are very passionate about their son, and they vocalize that to me. And that's one thing that was new to me. It's a process, man. And that's one thing I had to make sure I let our team know and our coaching staff know is that we were not going to focus on the results. We're going to focus on the process and how we prepare. And confidence comes from preparation, and the results will take care of itself. That was the theme. That's why I start and stop that.
Yeah, no doubt. And to what you said, all of us as parents want what's best for our kids or what we perceive to be as best for our kids. And often, not to save them, but to smooth over some of the bumps and bruises along the way. And to your point, right, the new set of parents, which was very different than you were used to, right? They worked hard, obviously, to put themselves and their families in those positions. And you got the other extreme where they're trying to make it day by day and you're blending those into one team. How did you stay on message and get people to come alongside of you after the initial struggles of that? What was the point where it was like, look, trust the process. It's not going to be overnight. And you were able to rally them to your side, because I know that's something that you're really good at.
Starting off 2-0 gave me some buffering, gave me some room, right? Gave me some space to work with. And then we lost 2 in a row. And then that's when the opinions started coming out. We should be doing this. We should be doing that. And then we competed well, man. We lost to the teams we're supposed to lose to. But then again, it's just the process of understanding that anything of value and worth always takes time, man. It always takes time. And that's one thing that people always want to bark about or have concerns about are this generation, is that everything's so instant at the tip of their fingers. They want to learn, they want to know something. They don't have to wait for it to come out in theaters. They don't have to wait for the CD to drop, right? They don't have to wait for the DVD to be released. It's at the tip of their fingers. It's live streamed and they can have it, right? Football doesn't work that way. Any sports in general don't work that way, right? Just understanding. And there's were times, man, where I felt it. I could feel it. We all, as coaches, we know when we walk into a room, you know if you're losing your team. You know if there's conversations going on in the corners and the shadows that's questioning the integrity of you as a leader, questioning you that you know what you're doing, and believing in the process and also believing in the direction and the vision we see ourselves going, right? I thought one thing I am pretty proud about is that I was able to catch those and be aware of those moments when they did arise and nip in the butt ASAP as soon as possible. And I spent a lot of time in the we meet every single day, coach. With our schedule compared to previous schools I've been at, this favored us immensely, man. It favored me as the head coach immensely because it gave me the time to prepare and also to harp on, okay, this is our process, man. I've been here. And there's another thing. I had to sell them because they don't know who I am. I'm a guy from out of state. They have no idea who I am, what I'm able to accomplish in my life as an athlete or as a coach. So I almost felt like I had to sell them. Like, dude, I know what I'm doing. Just please, just trust me. I've been here before. It's not audio, right? As a saying goes. So.
And that's the hard thing, because ultimately you find yourself between a rock and a hard place, especially in our area where everybody knows who you are. And you don't want to be the guy that's trotting your resume out being like, here, just read this and trust me. And it's, so how do you thread the needle of staying humble, staying confident without having to like name drop and pull out the film and be like, just hear me out. And it's, so it's like such a fascinating thing that you just mentioned when you're the new guy, haven't been in community. One of my best friends on the pod early on, first five episodes or so, said, you're the outsider. And when you come in, you have to figure out what the culture is, right? While you're trying to move the needle a little bit. Talk a little bit about some of the things you implemented that are sustainable. Remember the last time I asked you, what's the best thing you do in your program that will go with you where you go? What was that?
Community service, outreach. And the great thing about our school, because it is a Christian school, we do that within the school schedule, is that we have outreach programs. We go throughout the neighborhood and we pick up trash in the surrounding neighborhoods. We're just serving other people and we use that time. So I didn't have to necessarily use practice time or football time for those events. And that's more of an off-season thing anyway. But one thing I did implement that I haven't done before is the mental preparation things that I learned and it was certified through a couple of years back. And I got a chance to actually implement within my program, which I thought was, if we finished 4-5 and we won the games we won and we lost the close games that we lost to, I can't imagine what it would be like if those challenges and those just facing adversity in the face and seeing in the face, like, I don't know how we would have responded if we didn't have that training.
Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like for our listeners that may want to do something similar, right? And obviously they don't know who you are unless they're familiar with the area, but just a 5-second sound bite of the training you've done, but also how you've turned that into kind of your side hustle. And now how you're implementing it directly into teams, right? When we talked 2.5 years ago, it wasn't hypothetical. You were just starting to do it, but now it's really part of who you are and your makeup and how you approach people.
First thing I teach is self-talk, man, because we all talk to ourselves. And there's two types of self-talk, motivational self-talk that David Goggins, right? That gets you going, that gets you fired up, to get you through the workout, to get you through the day. If you're having a challenge, right? You want to finish the rep, you want to finish the sprint, motivational self-talk, right? And then there's instructional self-talk. Self-talk that's going to instruct you to do your job to the best of your ability. And I give countless examples of videos from the NFL level to Olympians to college athletes to high school athletes who perform at the highest level in their field. And I use a plethora of examples to let them know that everybody does it. And this is how to implement this within your own craft, right? And I'm always reminding them of it. We talk about it on a daily basis. It's part of our routine, which is another mental performance strategy, is having a routine, pre-game routine everybody knows about. But we also have a pre-practice routine. We have a post-game routine as well. So just those two strategies alone, it was just very helpful in us being who we were to this season.
What do those look like? When you say we have a pre-practice routine, coach us up. What does that look like? We have a post-game routine. What does that look like?
Pre-practice routine, we have a meeting. I talk 10 to 15 minutes on a certain theme, or for example, finish was one of our, for the last season, that was our theme for the week. So I talk about finishing. I give quotes about finishing. I show sound bites of coaches talking about finishing or athletes talking about finishing. Then that's our routine. Then we watch film. Film was part of our routine, right? And then breaking down the practice film. I don't know how many high school coaches in the area film practice, but we're one of the teams in the area that film practice, right? And I know we're part of the minority in that aspect of it. There's not many schools that film practice. So we do that because I want kids to be held accountable every single day. And you cannot hide, man. It's a performance-based industry. It's performance-based, man. So we have to make sure we're performing and being held accountable to do so. That was our routine. And then we go to practice. We practice. And that was it. And then we have a 48-hour routine, coach. We have a meeting. We start our visualization. We start playing the game in our mind because everything always happens twice, first in our mind and then in reality. And then I give them other strategies to reset themselves, take a deep breath, have a verbal trigger, have a physical trigger, all part of our routine during the week to help them prepare and get their mind ready for Friday night.
I want to go back to this filming of practice. And this is something that I never did. And then over the last couple of years, it was regular. I don't want to say religious, but it was We got the cameras in the gym now. Most places have these cameras on the fields that are automated. You just set it in there, boom. And what you said, it's not just accountability, but it's also an elite teaching tool where you're in the moment in practice trying to tell a kid, show a kid, instruct a kid, and they're getting it, but they're not. Mm-hmm. And then the film automatically goes up into your hosting site and you can actually send a little clip. Hey, this is what we were talking today. Can you talk about how that's transformed your approach to teaching and the value of that relative to how you used to do things?
I tell you what, it gives me such a peace of mind knowing we're filming practice, coach, because there'll be times where we stop a play and we're trying to figure out what happened and then it's taking too long. And I'll say, hey, coach, man, we got to get going. We got to get the next play. Because all I say during that time, hey, we'll watch it back on film. We'll watch the tape. So we can always catch it later and fix it later. And then we send the playlist out either that night or when we talk, or we have it ready for the next meeting before practice for the next day. So it gives me the peace of mind, coach, that whatever we missed during the day, during the practice time in the day, that we're going to catch it on film. And there's been so many instances and moments and experiences that I had where you think, one, you played well and you turn the film on and we got real, real lucky, man. We didn't do things the right way, right? Or you think that you didn't play very well and you turn the film on, you watch it back. Man, we did some really good things better than I thought we did, right? So there's so many things that's in the phrase or the peace of mind just comes to my mind immediately, because that's exactly what it does for me, is that we can always catch it later. We don't need to fix it right now. We'll do our best we can to fix it right now if it's a big issue or there's any confusion that needs to be clarified. But if it's just a mistake that somebody made, we'll watch it back later. And that's it, and we move on.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that I'm curious about where you are at this point in your life in regards to post-game debrief, right? We all grew up with the, like, not getting barked at, but the recap and the 20-minute post-game. And I'm at the point now where I walk in the locker room, it's, all right, hey, celebrations. Celebrate, walk out. I don't talk about the game till I've looked at it, because ultimately I have my perception of what happened, but it might not be real.
Correct. And a part of our post-game, so I'm like you, coach, where I try not to keep the team too long. And I learned this too, man. After a win, I always find something to harp on, even if we won, to let them know that, hey, man, there's still work to be done. Right? I'll pick one thing that kind of stood out to me, whether guys getting overly confident or guys taking plays off or maybe we had a turnover, and I'll make sure I harp on that, because I want to let them know, yeah, it's great. We're going to celebrate. We're going to be in the moment. But at the same time, there's still work to be done, right? But then if we suffer a lesson, or other people like to call it a loss, when we suffer a lesson, that I take the opposite approach. I don't want to be, they're already beaten down, man. I don't need to beat them down anymore. So I start highlighting certain things that we did well, or certain individuals that did well. And then we'll talk about the film and we'll say, hey, we'll get better. We'll watch the film and we'll move on from there. And that's it.
Yeah, no, I love that you brought that up. It's such an invaluable teaching tool. And anybody that's listening that has one of those cameras in your gym that are permanent, turn them on and record practice. You can schedule it out for the whole year. Shows up, you get it automatically. If you're Huddle or VidSwap or whatever set up, the kids get it automatically. It's great. Let me ask this. What have you most recently changed your mind on from a coaching standpoint since you moved to Colorado? Right? I used to be over here and now I'm over here. Here's why. And it was an intentional decision.
Man, I would have to say it. I'm doing a much better job delegating responsibility amongst my coaching staff. I had a really hard time while I was at Gonzales letting go of some control, because I think it was maybe because it was my first time being a head coach. And I want to make sure things were done the right way. And I didn't delegate much work. I would actually, sometimes I'll micromanage quite a bit, to be honest with you, right? Especially when it came to running the defense. I taught our defensive coordinator that's the scheme I wanted him to implement and run. So looking back now, and the growth I've experienced is that now I let my defensive coordinator, I say, hey, run what you run, man. If I don't agree with certain things that you're doing, then I'll let you know. But other than that, if you don't hear anything from me, keep doing what you're doing. And the special teams coordinator as well. I didn't have much, any input or hands on special teams this season, which is the first time I've done that as a head coach. And I just let go of the reins a little bit, man, allow my coaches to coach. But also, as good help's hard to find, right? So I've had a really highly capable, highly high quality coaches in those roles that did a really good job and had great ambition, had the same vision, shared the same vision as I. And if, I think if it was somebody who needed a little more support, I probably would have had a little more hands-on. But these guys were just, they're capable, man. They're competent, and I let them just run with it, man. I just say, hey, do it your way.
So let's talk about that. You were in California when you got hired and you had to hire a staff. How'd you go about that and end up with people that you were able to give a lot more freedom than you ever would have before?
And my defensive coordinator is a second year coach. He's only coached high school football for 2 years. This was his second year and his first year ever being a coordinator. And he was a former, he played for Coach Harbaugh at Michigan, was play safety. They played for the Broncos for a couple of years. But we both know, man, we've been around guys who play at the highest level, the 1%. And just because they play at a high level doesn't necessarily mean they can coach at a high level, right? But he defied that. He was very coachable. He would always ask me, coach, after each practice during the summer, hey, coach, are you okay with this? How does this look? All right. He would always come to me and ask, coach, what do you think? How do you think I'm doing? Or what do you think of the things that I'm implementing and trying to teach our players? And I'll give him the feedback. Man, you're just doing a good job. And obviously there was things where he was learning and growing at the same time, but I didn't want to interfere with that, man, because you have to learn in the fire sometimes, man. And I gave him that opportunity to learn in the fire, to make the mistakes that he needed to make for him to grow and be the best coach he can be for the next year, right? I didn't interfere with that, man. I think about our children. I'm a father of two. And if I try to prevent my children from falling, from trying new things, I am interfering with their growth and their development, man. Right. I'm making them fearful instead of being courageous. Right. So I take the same approach now within my coaching staff. Hey, go do it. I might necessarily agree with it, but I'm going to allow you to experience it. And then you come with the conclusions on your own. And then we'll talk about it. That's why we have coaches meetings. So we can talk about those things, but I'm not going to interfere with your growth or your development.
No, I love that. And it goes back to, again, can you, one, coach your guys up and set them loose? Can you hire people that are in alignment with you and let them loose? And can you, which I think you mentioned here, find some dissenting opinion that will help you grow as a coach as well? Talk a little bit about that as you land in a new place with your own ideas, your own experience, and you're hiring other people and you're building a staff built on trust and camaraderie and conflict. Did you have some good moments of aha based on some of the conversations around what you were doing and how things shook out?
I think, I don't know if we had any aha moments, but we definitely had moments where we were very accountable for our decision-making as a coaching staff, right? Where we thought certain kids were going to be certain players for us and they were not. And we had to move them in different positions. I think we did a really good job. I was really proud of my coaching staff, man. I thought we did a really good job being real with ourselves. I thought we did a really good job coming together, working together, asking questions and feeding off each other and giving suggestions. Cause I know I've been a part of some staffs where people don't feel heard. They don't feel heard. They keep their mouth shut. They don't even really give any opportunity to give suggestions or offer suggestions or coach their position group their way. But that was not going to be me in this opportunity. I don't know, man. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but.
Oh, you did. It was fine.
I often feel as a head coach, we go one of two ways. Sometimes we land in the middle, right? Where we hire people that are in alignment with us, that agree with us. They're not necessarily yes people, but ultimately they want to please, right? Or you go the other way where you're purposefully looking for dissenting opinion and conflict so that you can grow and the group can get better. And obviously it's a spectrum of 1 to 10. You want to land in the 4 to 6 zone, right? But it's like, how do you bring that in to your point of, I've been on staffs where people didn't feel heard, right? That's a delicate balance as a head coach to figure that out. What have you learned over the years as you try to perfect that balance, so to speak? And we're never going to get it right, but how have you figured out and how have you changed in trying to do that?
The post-practice huddle, I gave every coach opportunity to share their thoughts, right? How practice went, whether it was with their position group or overall as a team, what they observed. In our coaches' meetings, I really give them a voice. Hey, what do you think? What do you think? Or how do you see your position group being coached, man? And another thing I always do, I make sure I do this myself quite a bit with the self-reflection, is If I was able to come without myself and watch myself coach, would I be pleased with the coach I am? Or would I be, would I even play for the coach I am today, right? I'm always aware of that. I'm always aware of, would I play for the coach I am today? Or would I not like me? Or would I not like playing for me? Or would I be the coach that took and spoiled the love of the game that I once loved and really enjoyed, and I took that away from them because of my coaching, or the way I approach coaching, right? So I'm always aware of, like, okay, what kind of coach am I? How am I coaching? And another thing that's changed over the years is that you can't coach every kid the same, right? You can't. So I've lost kids that way. And there's been kids where I should have been harder on, and they needed to be they needed me to be harder on, and I wasn't. And it came back to me 5-10 years after they graduated. And this one experience specifically with this one player that I coach at Soledad changed my whole perspective on coaching hard. He said, "Coach," he told this to my brother, he said that Coach Art could have been harder on me, and he wasn't. And I wish he was. And that hit me between the eyes, man. It really hit me between the eyes. And I remember there was plenty of moments where I could have coached hard on him. I could have coached him hard. I could have ripped into him and held him accountable. And I didn't, because I didn't think he could handle it. I thought he was going to go into a shell and either quit the team or just be mad at me all year long, right? And if I was a young coach, we all were young coaches at one time. We want to be liked by our players, man, right? We want to be liked. And I was just the immature, inexperienced coach that I was at that time. I didn't understand that. But looking back now, I make sure I coach every kid in the way that I understand their personality, how are they coached, I coach them. So if I take them to the side, I take them to the side, but I'm very stern with them. I'm very clear with them. Hey, this is what I expect from you, and you're not doing these things, right? And there's certain kids who need to be barked at. They need to be called out in front of the team, right? They need to be made an example of in front of the team, because that's this kind of personality they have, and they can handle that, right? Those are the things I have learned over the years, man, of how to handle certain players. And then the experience I had with my former player, my like coach could have been harder on me. I'm never going to let anyone say that about me ever again.
No doubt. Let me ask one more follow-up that's specific to football here. So small roster, big roster, small to medium roster this year. And you talk about position groups. It's very different coaching a team of 30 than of 60, right? Where guys are playing both ways. Guys are playing in different positions. They're all got to move around. In a perfect world, given a roster size that you have-ish, right? How do you navigate that you can't just, this is what you do, Jimmy. You are the left cornerback. Yeah, but tomorrow you might be the linebacker, right? So how do you set your team up to where these are the position groups they're coaching and still have that structure, but also plan for when that's not going to work out? Talk a little bit about what you've learned in doing that, because obviously a Hollister, it's a whole different beast where it's almost collegiate because of the number of kids you have. Right.
Oh, absolutely.
So talk a little bit now where you're at and advice you can offer. Here's what I figured out how to best structure practice, how many coaches you need, what type of groups do you need so that it all comes together at the end.
Right. And that's one thing we have to be very intentional about, not only in the practice field, but also film session. Because, guy, like you said, we have, I think every starter for the most part played both ways, man. There was only maybe a handful of kids who only played one way. And we had to cross-train certain kids too. I had a kid playing tight end and fullback for me. I had a quarterback playing receiver when he wasn't playing quarterback. I ran a three quarterback system this year, right? Which is nothing I've never done before, because I was just trying to do the best I could with the personnel that I had to make sure there's only one football and there's 11 guys in the field. I have five guys who could do some really good things with the ball. So I had to figure out how to way to get the ball in their hands, right? Just all of that, man, in a short period of time from June 12th, we only had 6-8 weeks to get ready for fall camp. And man, it was a grind, man. It was a grind. And I really had to rely on just how our evaluation process within our personnel, not only for myself, but within our coaching staff and what's being said within our meetings. But the cross training was huge, man. Like, we had obviously offensive linemen going playing D line, we had a left guard playing defensive end. Just getting the amount of reps. For example, our practice structure coach would be 45 minutes of offense, 4 or 5 minutes of defense. On a given day, it'll be an hour. At the very most, we'll have an hour of offense, an hour of defense, depending on how long our meetings went. But the meeting part was very crucial too, because I had to give time for the defensive coach have time with his guys to coach his guys, and I had to give myself time to coach the offensive guys. It can be a little tricky, man, but with my teaching schedule, it really set me up to be successful in that area for preparation. So I could really down to the second of what are we watching for 5 minutes? What are we watching for the next 5 minutes? And then who's next after I get done with my session?
Yeah, no doubt. And that's probably what you said when you came out of Hollister with all the different breakdown periods and how you're able to manipulate and use that in your new landing spot. All right. I always ask this and you got it the last time. What have you learned watching other sports since you've been at Hollister and now you're at Forge Christian that you've been able to steal and apply to your approach as a football coach?
One thing off the field, I took a player parent contract that I never done before, right? Code of conduct. And that's from not only for the player, but also for the parent, which is something new for me, right? So that's something I took from a basketball coach and a baseball coach. I asked, actually just this week, I asked them, hey, can I see your handbook or whatever they have written down as far as how they run their program? And then both coaches sent me a copy of how they implement this within their program and establish as our culture that we're going to conduct ourselves in a certain way. And if you don't conduct yourself in a certain way, you're not being a good example representing our school. I know you love your child, I know you love your son, but we have to be aware of the code of conduct. And if you're not if you're not meeting those expectations, man, there's gonna be consequences, just like there is consequences for anybody else that doesn't follow the rules, right? So that I would say that's the biggest thing I've implemented so far going into this offseason, is understanding that actually could have a contract for conduct, which I didn't know. I knew we could have it for the student athlete, but I didn't know we can be both the student and the parents. I don't know what your experience are with parents in your program, coach, but this is something new for me, right? So I'm looking forward to just continuing to build this rapport and these relationships and understanding that just got to believe in our process, man. Just got to trust it. You got to trust it.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, coach. I appreciate you coming back on. It's been a while. It's been fun. We'll have to catch back up in a couple of years once you get that thing into a juggernaut like you have everywhere else.
Hey, appreciate you, man. Thank you, coach.
This podcast was also brought to you by ttroops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. ttroops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you gotta keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down an Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at ttroops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to ttroops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.